Well, greetings. Welcome to The Dividing Line. It is a Tuesday. It's an unusual time for us, but it's a week before I head out for nearly a month on the road, and that means I've got lots and lots and lots and lots of things to be doing, so we just got to stick stuff in where you can. I don't know if any of the rest of you saw this yesterday, but all of a sudden I started seeing a letter sent by the major airline carriers to the Biden regime, and especially to the most qualified transportation secretary that has ever held the job here in the United States, Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, basically saying that if tomorrow AT&T and Verizon switch on their C-band 5G, which I guess is the next fastest thing that will allow you to, like, you know, use your phone to play video games or something, I don't know, in real time online, who knows. Anyway, that they will shut down, basically. They will not be able to fly in and out of the airports where this is available. And I'll admit, I missed out on this. I mean, I heard stuff about 5G a long time ago. Didn't really follow a whole lot of it. But I was just doing some reading, and basically, and to make a long story short, the C-band stuff for 5G, the airlines are concerned that it will interfere with their radar system that their aircraft use in landing in low visibility. Now, I've landed, I mean, I ain't flying no more, but I've certainly landed in low visibility in the past. It's a little nerve-wracking. I've had a few go-arounds. I remember once in California, we had three before we finally got down. And I don't know, seeing those buildings that close to you while the engines are, you know, it's a little nerve-wracking. Okay. So, yeah, I want stuff to work there. I want the airplane stuff to work there. And, you know, the phone would be nice to work there too, but of the two, obviously far more important to have the airline stuff working. So anyways, they have delayed switching that stuff on. I guess they had already worked out buffer zones where they won't be using it in that area. So if you want to, if you have a virtual reality thing, which I've never had on my face, and to be very honest with you, the way things are going, I never will. If you've got your VR mask and you just have to, as soon as you get off the plane, get back into your first person shooter game, you may not be able to do that until you get a few miles away from away from the airport, because you landed safely. But I honestly, last night as I went to bed, I was reading some of this stuff going, you know, I don't know. Do you really feel super comfortable with Pete Buttigieg as the head of the transportation secretary? Is he overly concerned about this kind of stuff? I don't know. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, that's the kind of stuff we've got going on today. Every single day brings new insanity. And you know what? I've noticed we tend, obviously, and this is understandable, we tend to gravitate toward the sources of information, news sources, things like that, that echo our own thinking. There's no question that we tend to do that. The reality is that means the mainstream media is pretty much dead to me these days, including Fox, to be perfectly honest with you. And right now, a lot of smart people who prognosticate the future, who missed everything going on now, but prognosticate about the future, are really wondering, what does mainstream media mean anymore? In light of the fact that Joe Rogan's podcast is like 11 times larger than CNN's highest listening audience, I think. One podcast. Yeah. let alone MSNBC, which is, you know, a fraction of that. So the future is going to be different, obviously. But I hope you noticed, or maybe you didn't, but I'll tell you about it now. There was a lot of voices calling out for Spotify to basically put warnings before and after Joe Rogan's broadcast, because he's interviewing people that are not supporting the narrative and science. And we literally live in a day where science is now being defined by politicians, most of whom failed every science class they ever took, obviously, if they took any at all. And so now it's, you know, the science. The result of this is that what we're seeing is there were people years ago talking about the fracturing of the societal structure of the United States. Well, it is in bad shape. It is fractured, and the fissures are growing larger every single day. And there are people with crowbars putting their entire might into getting those fissures to open up more and more, because they want it to fall apart so it can be replaced with something that will be much more amenable to the global elites. But even they, and this is part of our hope, Lord, even they are not all on the same page. I mean, it's obvious that China is not our friend. China's not anybody's friend except China's, and not even China. China's not even the friend of China, when you think about it. Chinese people are horribly abused by their leaders. But China also recognizes that if the United States economy collapses, theirs collapses right along with it, big time. So there are people who do want our economy to collapse. I don't think China's amongst them. China wants to control us. China wants to use us. But I think China recognizes if our economy collapses, theirs goes with it. And that tenuous balance that they have of keeping their people somewhat happy with life as it is under their control could be broken if their economy collapses and all of a sudden they're basically doing the bread and circuses thing. They are entertaining their people into quiescence. They recognize that where the Soviets blew it is you couldn't keep people happy if they're starving to death. If they're cold in the winter and they're hot in the summer and they can't buy a new car for 27 years and they can buy one. Everybody's got plenty of money. It's got nothing to buy with it. They realize that's where it all fell apart. And so they've put enough free market stuff in to, you know, keep their people distracted and with enough stuff that they put up with it rather than going into the streets and doing what needs to be done. So anyway, what that has resulted in, this division in the United States, because we pretty much just, we sort of are in our area, once in a while, all of a sudden, you'll see something and you'll go, I didn't know. The hatred that is being ginned up around the world for the unvaxxed has tremendous parallels in the past. This is how leftist governments have dealt with their enemies for a long, long time, is to objectify them, lie about them, turn them into the enemy. And now that we have the, in my opinion anyways, the greatest aid to the destruction of human freedom and liberty that has ever been developed, called secularism. Secularism. That human destroying, human flourishing, obliterating concept that you are a cosmic accident with no transcendent value. You have no reason to spend any of your time looking at who's come before you. You have no reason to treat those who've come before you fairly, because they were cosmic accidents. You're a cosmic accident. Connection between you is just biological. There's no other meaning to it whatsoever. And part of that is to break down national borders, by the way. so that you don't have any pride in being Scottish or pride in being an American or whatever. That's another part of it. But you don't look to the people in the past, because what they did back then should not only be judged by your standards today, even though they may have had the same standards back then, but it's meaningless to you today, because there's no transcendent meaning that can be communicated from them to you. There's nothing you can learn from them. There's no value in a culture that they would develop. And looking the other direction, why should you care about the future? Get yours now. That's why, you know, children, who needs to have children? In fact, you should stop having children. You should not think about the future. You should not build so that your great-great-grandchildren will look back upon you. Because again, you're all just cosmic accidents. There's no purpose or meaning. There's no objective truth that's being communicated and that has value. And this is what secularism is. Secularism is the most anti-Christian, anti-human, anti-beauty, anti-truth concept that has ever infected the sin-sick minds of men. And we are in its greatest apogee of power right now. It has never had the kind of power that it has gained and is seeking to consolidate right now. And as a result, people who are infected with this mental disease of secularism, which destroys all foundations upon which you can build a meaningful society, a meaningful epistemology, a meaningful anything, people who are infected with this disease are easily controlled by simply making appeal to their life now. It's Joel Osteen, your best life now. It works with secular people, sadly. Because that's all there is your life now. Once you're dead, nothing else matters to you. There's going to be no judgment. There's nothing to pass on to the next generation. And if you pretend that you can, that's just fantasy anyways. So people who think that way easily and fully understandably embrace safism as a religion. Why? Because this is all I've got, is my life now. That's why in our society right now, in Western society as a whole, and really globally, we are sacrificing our children on the altar of our convenience. One of the most disgusting things that has come out of all the COVID panic and everything else is what adults will do to children to keep the adults safe. It's not for the children. We're not doing this for the children. We're doing it for the adults, and really only the older adults primarily, and a certain class of younger adults that either genetically have issues with their health or just don't work enough at staying healthy, we will sacrifice our children. There are literally places now that are requiring N95 masks. Now, look, we talked about this stuff in July, August of 2020. We started talking about mask studies and stuff like that. And we said then, the studies demonstrate that cotton masks are not only irrelevant, they're actually a negative. And the N95 are for medical use, and they can only be worn for a certain period of time, because obviously the greater the level of filtration, the harder it is to expel waste. That's what your breath is. And to take in oxygen, you're trying to get rid of the carbon dioxide and you're trying to take in oxygen. And so you have to work harder, the more effective the mask is. And that's why, if you're going to wear an N95 mask in a meaningful fashion, I have to be clean shaven. You have to be clean shaven. Beards beards will be made illegal in the not too distant future. Just watch. You're crazy. Been doing pretty well for 2 years, actually. We've been proven right over and over and over again on so many things. You just watch. If this continues before some level of sanity kicks in, beards will be outlawed. Because you've seen guys with big, full beards with these little... everybody knows it's not doing anything. But the reality is an N95 mask should be changed frequently. It has a high filtration rate, which means you, for anybody with any kind of asthma or something like that, it's just a no-go. There are school districts in California requiring N95 masks for kids, even though the CDC website specifically says children should not wear N95 masks. Doesn't matter. I mean, look at these teachers' unions. Man, if you haven't learned anything about teachers' unions over the past number of years, you're not paying attention. So we said a year and a half ago that eventually this is where it's going to go. Oh, no. They'll get the vaccines. Well, now Pfizer's saying, I don't know if you saw it. Look it up. There's a story going around right now. It's a true story. Someone has dug out the reality that 12 years ago? Yeah, a little over 12 years ago, I think. Pfizer's veterinary arm was selling a vaccine for cows that would supposedly keep them getting a particular disease. Well, all of a sudden, this strange disease started hitting herds in the UK and Europe, because that's where they were selling it, where calves would be born, and they're bleeding from everywhere, their eyes and their mouth and everywhere, and they eventually die. And they eventually found out these were always the offspring of the dams, the cows, that had been given the Pfizer vaccine. And so, like 2 days before Germany was going to start investigating, they stopped selling it in Germany. But they kept selling it elsewhere. They eventually pulled it without ever admitting any wrongdoing in regards to the loss that people had from that vaccine. And it was a Pfizer-based vaccine. The head of the veterinary arm of Pfizer then is the CEO now of all of Pfizer. Same guy. So now Pfizer says, we're going to have an Omicron vaccine. At the speed at which Omicron is flying through the population, masks or no masks, vaccines or no vaccines, nothing is stopping it. Nada, nicht. This stuff goes everywhere. And everybody's getting it. By the time the spring comes here, we will have all had it. And it will be irrelevant. But watch what will happen. It will be required for everyone, including everyone who has already had it. This will be added to the list. And then the next one after that. And we'll always be one step behind it. Which is why we never, ever, 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 ever did this before. We knew that you could not do it. We would guess at what the prevalent virus strain during the flu season would be. And we would put out a vaccine based on that guess. But we never thought, it was never in anyone's mind until 2020 that you could actually wipe out a respiratory virus using vaccines. We just knew you're always one step behind. It's too fast. Can't do it. Well, now you have science. Now you have Anthony Fauci. And now you have we will rule over nature. We will demonstrate our superiority. And if you have to die in the process, that's fine. So you've got the military refusing to give exemptions even when medical information is submitted to them that demonstrates that this particular vaccine would be deadly to this person because they have an allergic reaction to the medium in which this mRNA stuff is inserted in your body. They still say, you're out. You're out. We won't. Not going to do it. They want a compliant military that will do whatever they're told. That's frightening, to be perfectly honest with you, when you think about what these people are willing to demand. So anyway, in the midst of all this, you've got poor Novak Djokovic, arguably he's certainly one of the top three men's tennis players in the world right now. He is a dominant player. And what has happened to him in Australia should be absolutely ashamed of itself as how it has behaved toward him. But it's not just that. It's not just, hey, boycott it, don't watch it, let it die on the vine. And I think every single player should just pull out. Just kill it. You're not going to let him play? He just had COVID. He's not a danger to anybody. You told him he could come. He did. He crossed every T, dotted every I. And then you'd realized, oh, wait a minute. He has natural immunity. We don't want people to trust natural immunity. So we're going to go back on our word. Pull out and kill it. The Australian Open. Kill it. Let it come back next year and stand for something. That's what I say. But this poor guy, one of the greatest players around, perfectly healthy, not a danger to anybody. The hatred that I have seen expressed for him by people on the left. Irrational, animal level hatred. And it's because this is what the government wants. They want you to hate the unvaccinated. Or I think, given that they changed the definition of vaccination, vaccination used to be something you would be injected with something that would make you immune to a particular disease. Well, that's not what this stuff is. So I think we should have natural persons and genetically modified persons. That's a much more accurate description. You have natural persons using natural immune system versus genetically modified persons, where you have genetically modified their immune system. And that's why the Israelis are going, the fourth shot, no, it's... They recognize this stuff messes with the immune system. And all this sudden extra mortality has nothing to do with COVID-19. Well, we all know where it come from. Yes, you do. You know exactly where it's coming from. It messes with the immune system. You're killing people right and left. They don't care. Hundreds of billions of dollars. They don't care. You can't prove it. It's amazing, because it's almost like, well, I took it, and so I don't want to admit that I did something dangerous, and so I'm just going to get really angry at anybody else that doesn't do the same dumb thing I did. That's the thinking. So a couple days ago, I'm not sure when this was, January 14th, so four days ago, Professor Ehud Kimron, head of the Department of Microbiology and Immunology at Tel Aviv University, and the Israelis have been all over this. I mean, this has been, wow, sort of scary for people who think that Israel is this great place of wonderful democratic freedom. Not so sure. Anyways, Professor Ehud Kimron, head of the Department of Microbiology and Immunology at Tel Aviv University, one of the leading Israeli immunologists, wrote an open letter to the Ministry of Health. Ministry of Health, it's time to admit failure. In the end, the truth will always be revealed, and the truth about the coronavirus policy is beginning to be revealed. When the destructive concepts collapse one by one, there is nothing left but to tell the experts who led the management of the pandemic, we told you so. 2 years late, you finally realize that a respiratory virus cannot be defeated and that any such attempt is doomed to fail. You do not admit it because you have admitted almost no mistake in the last 2 years. Still, in retrospect, it is clear that you have failed miserably in almost all of your actions, and even the media is already having a hard time covering your shame. Despite years of observations and scientific knowledge, you refuse to admit that the infection comes in waves that fade by themselves. You insisted on attributing every decline of a wave solely to your actions, and so, through false propaganda, you overcame the plague. And again, you defeated it, and again, and again, and again. You refuse to admit that mass testing is ineffective, despite your own contingency plans explicitly stating so, Pandemic Influenza Health System Preparedness Plan 2007, page 26. You refuse to admit that recovery is more protective than a vaccine, despite previous knowledge and observations showing that non-recovered vaccinated people are more likely to be infected than recovered people. You refuse to admit that the vaccinated are contagious despite the observations. Based on this, you hope to achieve herd immunity by vaccination. And you failed in that as well. You insisted on ignoring the fact that the disease is dozens of times more dangerous for risk groups and older adults than for young people who are not in risk groups, despite the knowledge that came from China as early as 2020. You refused to adopt the Barrington Declaration, signed by more than 60,000 scientists and medical professionals and other common sense programs. You chose to ridicule, slander, distort, and discredit them. Instead of the right programs and people, you have chosen professionals who lack relevant training for pandemic management, physicists as chief government advisors, veterinarians, security officers, media personnel, and so on. You have set up an effective system for reporting. You have not set up an effective system for reporting side effects from the vaccine, and reports on side effects have been deleted from your Facebook page. Doctors avoid linking side effects to the vaccine, lest you persecute them as you did to some of their colleagues. You have ignored many reports of changes in menstrual intensity and menstrual cycle times. You hid data that allows for objective and proper research. For example, you removed the data on passengers at Ben-Gurion Airport. Instead, you chose to publish non-objective articles together with senior Pfizer executives on the effectiveness and safety of vaccines. Follow the money, folks. Irreversible damage to trust. However, from the heights of your hubris, you have also ignored the fact that the truth would be revealed in the end. And it begins to be revealed. The truth is that you have brought the public's trust in you to an unprecedented low, and you have eroded your status as a source of authority. The truth is that you have burned hundreds of billions of shekels to no avail for publishing intimidation, for ineffective tests, for destructive lockdowns, and for disrupting the routine of life in the last 2 years. You have destroyed the education of our children and their future as school principals around the country attest. You have made children feel guilty, scared, smoke, drink, get addicted, drop out, and quarrel. You have harmed livelihoods, the economy, human rights, mental health, and physical health. You slandered colleagues who did not surrender to you. You turned the people against each other, divided society, and polarized the discourse. You branded without any scientific basis people who chose not to get vaccinated as enemies of the public and as spreaders of disease. Sounds familiar. In an unprecedented way, you promote a draconian policy of discrimination, denial of rights, and selection of people, including children, for their medical choice, a selection that lacks any epidemiological justification. When you compare the destructive policies you're pursuing with the same policies of some other countries, you can clearly see the destruction you have caused has only added victims beyond the vulnerable to the virus. The economy you ruined, the unemployed you caused, and the children whose education you destroyed are the surplus victims as a result of your actions only. There is currently no medical emergency, but you have been cultivating such a condition for 2 years now because of lust for power, budgets, and control. The only emergency now is that you still set policies and hold huge budgets for propaganda and consciousness engineering instead of directing them to strengthen the healthcare system. This emergency must stop. Professor Yudi Kimron, Faculty of Medicine, Tel Aviv University. To which you will hear people saying, yeah, but we just believe the science. He touched on all sorts of important and vital things in that context. There was a report, and it couldn't be verified because the media will not report on it. That's another thing. One of the biggest things I've learned over the past couple of years is the blessing of an actual functional media, a journalistic class that seeks to investigate and to fairly, that's gone. Are there still some journalists out there? Yeah, I suppose so. But in general, the idea that the media will hold any government accountable for the lies it tells is done. The mainstream media is simply an extension of a political perspective. And that has left all of us at times scratching our head going, can I trust this? None of us have the ability to dig through everything and find out, is this a reliable source? Is it, where did this come from? I don't know. It's very frustrating. But In France, a life insurer has refused to cover a vaccine death. Although vaccination is recognized as a cause of death by doctors and the insurance company, it has refused to pay out. The reason is because the side effects of the corona jabs are known and published. They argue the deceased took part in an experiment at his own risk. The insurance company justified the refusal of payment of the family by stating that the use of experimental medication or treatments, including corona injections, is expressly excluded from the insurance contract. The family's subsequent lawsuit against the insurance company has been unsuccessful. The court allegedly, and the reason this can't be verified is because only the family is reporting this. The media will not run the story and get any other side. So this is a quotation given by the family. The side effects of the experimental vaccine are published, and the deceased could not claim to have known nothing about it when he voluntarily took the vaccine. There is no law or mandate in France that compelled him to be vaccinated. Hence, his death is essentially suicide. Since suicide is not covered by the policy from the outset, the insurance refuses to pay out. Well, why not? Well, but what if it is mandated? Well, that's the point, isn't it? That's the point. But we can't necessarily verify all this stuff because the media won't cover it. Now, yesterday, I'm just going through the stuff that I save for the programs that are not on that other channel. Rich will always write to me and he'll say, so we'll be on that place or will we be on the safe place? Yeah, I know I can say that. I still want to, yeah. Anyway, but I put all this stuff together and then get to run through all of it every once in a while. I don't know if you saw, I linked to it, the Heartland Institute, along with one other, let's see, who was it? Anyway, there was a survey done. And, and Rasmussen Reports. So Heartland Institute and Rasmussen Reports. And the scary part was here. 58% of voters would oppose a proposal for federal or state governments to fine Americans who choose to not get a COVID-19 vaccine. Only 58%. However, 55% of Democratic voters would support such a proposal compared to just 19% of Republicans. I don't even know who those Republicans are, but I guess I can guess who they vote for. Here, 59% of Democratic voters, 59%, almost 60%, would favor a government policy requiring that citizens remain confined to their homes at all times, except for emergencies, if they refuse to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Think about that. 59, 6 out of 10 Democratic voters polled support the idea that you should simply lock natural persons in their houses, unless they're willing to become genetically modified persons. 59%. Now, given the reality that the COVID strain that is currently running amok through the population is not only untouched by the current vaccines, despite the fact that the CDC says they're working very well. Again, only if you redefine working well and vaccine. They're working really well. Given that these things don't do anything, they don't stop you from spreading it. And there is evidence that after a certain period of time, they actually make you more susceptible to getting it. There is not a single rational argument that can be put forward for vaccine mandates in any context right now? None. Any government, any business that mandates vaccines in this context is doing so against all meaningful science. Against all of it. It does nothing. Oh, but you might not get quite as sick. Again, you might not even get it if you don't have the vaccine. I mean, that's the one thing they won't talk about is, well, wait a minute, there seems to be some evidence that there's a deleterious impact upon the immune system, and so that the vaccinated are more susceptible to getting it. So isn't that important? No. What you have to buy into, the only narrative, the only thing they've got left is, well, you're more likely to end up in a hospital if you don't. That's it. That's all I got. According to some study somewhere. You just have to believe us when we tell you, because we're demanding this of everybody. 59% of Democratic voters would say, yeah, lock them all up. Stick them in their houses. Don't let them out until they do what we've done. They need to think like us. They need to act like us. I was aware. There is another element to the story down in Australia. That player has won the Australian Open 9 times. 9 times. You would think that if there was some... Now, I don't know. I don't know anything about the people who run the Australian Open. Okay, I don't. And they may be the wokest people on the planet. They just may be, there's nothing we can do about this. The bunch of government thugs showed up at our office and said, you do this. I don't know. There's one thing for sure. The Australian government is run by thugs. I mean, it's a thugocracy. And so I wouldn't put it past them for a second to do that. No doubt. But you would think if they had anything, they'd be, this guy's won 9 times, you know? I mean, maybe we could let him go for number 10. Because I guess he's, you know, within range of winning the most majors in a career. And this will clearly make that more difficult for him to do. He's not getting any younger. And but the memes running around are the only professional player who has been banned for not taking drugs. That's just, it's true. That's what's going on with him. It is absolutely amazing. So I suppose I should go ahead and just mention this straight up. I was not surprised at all that recently a video came out of, you know, when Trump spoke, he was very defensive of his vaccines and telling people that they need to get vaccinated and all the rest of this stuff. And it just reminded me of what I had said during his presidency, that egomania is not a good thing. It's a negative thing. And obviously I've never thought that Donald Trump possessed the ability to analyze himself and did not possess the humility to go, well, I was wrong about that. I don't know, the worst case scenario, the worst case scenario, because I don't know if you saw, Tucker Carlson did a thing on Here Comes Hillary. And I'm just like, could you imagine if you wanted the most doomsday scenario ever, it would be Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton 2024. It'd be like one of those really bad scenarios in Star Trek. There was actually a really good Star Trek Next Generation episode where they were caught in this time loop, and they kept going around this time loop. And they eventually broke out of it, obviously, since the series continued on. That was a really good one. But that would be what I would feel like if once again, it was Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton. Oh, my goodness. Huh? Groundhog Day. Oh, okay. Yeah. No. Anyway. Yeah, I know. That would be worse. But that's the worst case scenario. But any scenario that has Donald Trump running in 2024 is, to me, really, really, really bad. If we do not have young leaders who do not have the baggage that Donald Trump has on the right, we're done. And everybody's automatically thinking about DeSantis. I'm not sure the Floridians would want to lose him, to be perfectly honest with you. But yeah, I the man cannot admit that he was completely buffaloed by what hit him, and he did not handle it well, and he's still defending what he did and his own vaccines, which, hey, I get it. The Democrats were running around going, I ain't never taken that vaccine. It's the Trump vaccine. It's horrible. And then as soon as Biden's off, oh, everybody's got to take it. You know, okay, I get it. Finding hypocrisy on the left is not really a major discovery, okay? Because that's just the way the left is. That's what it functions on. It happens on the right too, but not in the systemic way that it does on the left. But I Lord deliver us, I hope and pray, honestly, that we will not be dealing with a Donald Trump candidacy. I expect we will be, but I'm certainly praying that we will not be in any way, shape, or form. Did you hear? Did you see? I wonder how widely this stuff gets disseminated. But did you hear that Sotomayor will not attend in-person court proceedings, but will only do so remotely because Neil Gorsuch will not wear a mask? That makes me like Neil Gorsuch much more, and also makes me realize that Sotomayor is as clueless about the realities of things as she proved to be during the course of the hearings that resulted in the overturning of the OSHA regulation, but not the HHR stuff, which was a mixed bag as far as the result of that particular situation. And that was a shame. But there you go. There's what's going on in there. Interesting. I will mention, and I'll try to remember the link to this stuff. There was an article that came out yesterday, I think, Daily Wire, that sort of summarized some of the goings on Sunday, when many of us. And did you notice, did you follow this? I found this fascinating, I'll have to admit. We had Joe Boot on our program, and he was a part of the original pastors group in Canada that came up with the idea of the January 16th emphasis to basically say to the state, we will not submit. Doesn't matter if it was unanimously passed. We will not submit to this. We cannot submit to this. And here's why. And so we had him on. When was that? I don't know how long ago that was, but we had him on a number of weeks ago. And I contacted my fellow elders at Apologia, and I said, hey, if I'm in town, I hadn't gotten all my plans put together yet. I leave in less than a week. but I would love to preach on that subject. I've certainly spoken about it many, many times in many contexts in the past, and I did preach upon it Sunday evening. And so a number of people have been going, you know, there should be a website someplace where you sort of gather together those sermons so that people can access them. And it's not going away. It is a part of secular culture to seek to reject God's plan for human sexuality. And so what I did, you can sort of guess there's 20 or 30 passages at most that would lend themselves in a meaningful fashion. And then there are, if you limit that just to homosexuality and transgenderism, you know, less than a dozen that I could think of that you would find to be particularly specifically on topic. And so what I did is, having already spoken at Apologia within the past year to 18 months on a similar subject, I wanted to expand that just a little bit. And so I did sort of a pan-canonical Genesis 1 and 2 to Matthew 19, a continuing validity of the teaching that man is made in the image of God and that God defines male and female and it is good and it is foundational. And therefore, to reject that is to reject the authority, not only of the Christian scriptures, but of the risen Savior himself, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And then to use the connection between Leviticus 18. Now, it's not the first reference. You can go back to Genesis 18 and 19. But Leviticus 18, right, the beginning of the holiness code, there's a difference between Leviticus 18 and Leviticus 20. A lot of people look at those two, and since very, very similar language, they just sort of go, well, it's just repetitions, no big deal. No. Leviticus 20 is a part of the holiness code, and it is specifically for the people of Israel, and therefore there is penology. There is a penalty attached in regards. It's toevah. It's an abomination. Leviticus 18 is not a part of that code, and it's a part of the explanation. Now, it does give, Leviticus 18 is pretty much all of the relationship boundaries that are precluded by God's law in regards to incest and things like that are there in Leviticus 18. But it's in the context of, you shall not do what was done in Egypt, and you shall not do what is done by the people in Canaan. I despoiled the gods of Egypt, Exodus. Now you're going into Canaan and you're going to wipe them out. And this is my judgment upon them. And the land is spewing them out because they did all these things. And what's really important there is, it's not like God sent a bunch of prophets into the land for decades, warning them. And now they're guilty for these things because they knew. No, there were no prophets sent, and they're still guilty of these things because they did know. In other words, this is a part of the law written upon the heart. This is a part of the law that's written upon the heart. And so there is a real need to recognize the differing context between Leviticus 18 and Leviticus 20, because Leviticus 18 demonstrates this is something that is speaking to mankind in any context. You can't just simply dismiss this as some kind of cultic law just simply for the ancient Israelites. This is saying, hey, before the Israelites even came along, before the name of Yahweh was known amongst them, they were defiling themselves. They were defiling themselves. They were defiling the land spewing them out. You're now getting to take possession of that land because they have defiled themselves in these ways, so you don't do this. So started there, and then demonstrated by going all the way to 1 Timothy that this remains the consistent understanding. One thing I forgot to mention as I think about it, it's interesting how you can remember sort of what you, not necessarily what you said, but you do remember what you didn't say, is I did not point out and should have at some point, even though it was an hour and 6 minutes long. Jeff has ruined me. I used to be able to do 50 minutes. I can't do 50 minutes. It was an hour and 6 minutes long, which at Apologia is just, that's standard fare. It's pretty much about an hour five to an hour 10 is pretty much where we go. That's, and I wasn't looking at the clock. The clock's too small for me to see in the back. So there you go. But I didn't mention that you would not find any Jewish person in the days of Paul in the first century that had any other understanding of this than what, than what he had, what Jesus had, what the apostles had. And it would be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before anything like that developed. So I didn't mention that, but that is another thing to put into it. But one of the things I did do is I did say that if you are ever brought before a magistrate over this issue, because you have said certain things that are now considered, let's say they get the equality bill passed, and it becomes illegal in the United States to cause the harm. It's, you know, like C4 in Canada, the conversion therapy ban. If a magistrate is ready to pass sentence upon you, you need to look that person in the eye and bear testimony to them that they may be passing judgment upon you based upon man's law, but God will pass his judgment upon them based upon his law at that great day. And there is nothing they can do, nothing they can do to avoid that day outside of repentance and faith. That is, there is a higher law and they are violating that law. And that therefore I have no guilt for obeying a higher law while breaking a lesser law that is in violation of that. We need to have that prophetic voice, need to testify to them, and hope and pray. At the very least, if you were to do that, you know what your hope would be? That a year later, you're sitting there out in the exercise yard at the gulag, and who comes walking up to you but the magistrate that sent you there, because they've been sent there too, because your words were so used of God to bring conviction that they got in trouble themselves and now they're there. That would be a really good thing. That would be a very encouraging thing to experience, because if enough people happen, then maybe the whole thing gets straightened out. But anyway, we are truly looking at a situation in our nation right now of such great division. And what I'm looking for, and what I think you need to be looking for, is not the existence of the division. We already know that's there. What I'm looking for is hearing more and more people rejecting the anti-human concepts of secularism as the reason for why they are standing up in resistance against where the culture is going. Hearing quote-unquote conservatives saying that they're going to vote a certain way, or we're going to have a red wave, and we're going to, you know, I'll be honest with you. When I look at the leadership in the Republican Party today, primarily, they didn't know what to do when they had the majorities in the Senate and the House the last time they had them. They didn't accomplish anything. And it's because they're mainly secularists too. What I'm looking for, what I want to hear, are young people who are recognizing we have to be willing to sacrifice to go another direction. And that is a direction that recognizes that everything that we have been invested in identity politics and critical race theory and all of this stuff, that it is to be rejected, not because it hurts the economy, but because it is not itself true. It is a false narrative. And once Generation Z recognizes the emptiness and the destructiveness of the false narrative that has been force-fed into them, the question becomes, will there be people who are standing up and are loudly proclaiming from the rooftops something better? Not a return to 1950s leave it to beaverism. No one around anymore knows anything what that would be. The old style surface religiosity, but a vital, all across culture, recognition that we are made in the image of God, and only the gospel can, only the gospel of Christ will give that. And that's why I keep seeing dear brothers, they're still holding to some older views, but they can't be consistent because they likewise see that you can't have a culture that enthrones secular principles in its music and in its art and in everything else, and then over here you've got the kingdom of Christ. No, the kingdom of Christ is over all of this. That doesn't mean you don't recognize different spheres of authority, but the kingdom of Christ is over all of this. And Jesus is Lord over the arts. Jesus is Lord over government. Jesus is Lord over all these things. And the day's going to come when the insanity we're experiencing right now is going to collapse in upon itself. I don't know when it's going to be. I pray for sooner rather than later. But when you see what's going on in our own military today, what can you say? Lord, protect us? Why? For what reason? Well, for the sake of my children, my children's children. It's the best you can say. But you better be teaching your children and your children's children what it means to live under the Lordship of Christ between now and then, because that's the only way to invest in that future. That's the only way to invest down the road. Have those eyes heading that way. So there was a bunch of stuff, and there'll be more stuff that will happen today. Where once again, if nothing else, what you need to see is that secularism is the exact opposite. It is the polar opposite of the claims of Christ. And see what it's doing. See what its fruit is. And ask yourself the question, how can I be offering help? Not an escape, but how can I offer hope and help to those made in the image of God who by his Spirit come to realize this is emptiness? And they're looking around. And they're going to see the people who continue to have hope. And they're going to ask, what's the reason that hope within you? And that's when we give the reasoned answer for the hope that's within us. That's what Peter was actually talking about. And that's what we need to be doing too. So thanks for listening to the program today. What? Yes, sir. Well, I don't have that stuff. I did mention on Twitter, I mentioned the name of the church. Don't remember what it is. Biggest things that I'm doing on the trip, obviously, I'm in St. Charles. I believe the Wednesday night before I'm in St. Charles, I'm in Springfield. I put it on my Twitter thing just for the evening, just a quick stop there in Springfield. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we'll be at Covenant of Grace Church in St. Charles. And we're looking at possibility of something in the middle of next week, maybe in Texas. Haven't worked that out yet. But the next weekend, I'm teaching at Grace Bible Theological Seminary, and I'll be preaching there in Conway on Sunday. Where, I'm not exactly sure yet, but I've gotten some contact on that. And then the next week is the debate in Houston on Molinism with Dr. Tim Stratton, and I am supposed to be preaching that Sunday morning in Houston before I start heading back. I'm not speaking anywhere on the trip back because that would make it a really, really, really long trip to get back. So that's what we're doing on the trip, and we'll be doing lots of dividing lines along the way, as long as we don't have another snowpocalypse like they had last year and all the electricity went out and everything with the ice storms and everything. The long-term weather forecasts I've been looking at hasn't had any of that, thankfully. So anyway. So, yes, sir?
So on the donation front, we began yesterday sending out an email form the receipts for last year's donations. If you have not received your donation receipt via email, it's because I probably don't have your email address. Or I did discover some yesterday that are they're not good addresses. So you need to contact me, either call the office or email me at rpierce@aomin.org. That's rpierce at aomin.org. And get me that information. We are sending them out this week, so we're getting them out as fast as we can. And if I don't have your email, I need to get it. So that's what's going on there. And as far as the schedule that's on the website, I will be working on that this afternoon, trying to extract information from Rock and get that up there so that folks know where you're going to be and can come by. So that's all I've got.
There you go. Lord willing, one more program before we head out on the road. I'm not sure it'll actually be in here. I mean, I will have the unit out of storage, so it might be one that I actually just do from the unit. Just test stuff, make sure that stuff's working, get the camera functional again, all the rest of that kind of stuff. Probably be a good thing to do to test things, and we'll see. But one more program, and then we're off across the United States. Prayers appreciated for traveling mercies, and no mechanical breakdowns, and playing tag with crazy drivers and all the rest of that kind of stuff. It'd be very, very, very much appreciated. So we'll see you next time on the Dividing Line. God bless.